Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. In every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in the day-to-day of marketing. Now, my guest today is Julie Gordon. She has spent most of her professional career working with global companies and their clients on marketing, business development, and strategic initiatives. With a reputation for making things happen by offering creative solutions to complex situations. Now, while working for luxury houseware brands, she continues her style of marketing and selling products based on educating the customer rather than selling an item. Because it is her firm belief that understanding how each product will help them enjoy their time in the kitchen, it becomes an experience that is being sold rather than just a piece of cookware. And as a side note, she's also a creator, which we absolutely dive into in this episode. So put your AirPods in, my friends, turn up that volume, and get ready for my guest today, Julie Gordon. All right, Julie, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast. We had to get it started because you and I were already starting to talk about the topic in general, but I'm excited to have you on.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here. So enjoy talking to you.
I know. I give people a little peek into like what our rabbit hole conversation sounds like. And I'm specifically excited to talk to you about this qualitative versus quantitative market. Marketing, not market. Just because I think that so often, like as marketers, we're held to that the quantitative metrics, right? Of like, did this get X, right? Where it's the ROAS, it's the attribution, it's all of those things. Now, before we do dive into that, I would love it if you could share a little bit about yourself and just kind of your experience in, you know, the corporate and the private world.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I am based in Chicago and a Midwestern girl initially, but based in Chicago now. My background is very much tying marketing and business development together. I have worked, as you mentioned, in the corporate world, in the agency world, and then in the entrepreneurial world. So I've kind of been on all sides of the desk is one of the things that I like to say, because it helps me to understand how to communicate with the different people I'm talking to, whether clients or brands or whomever I'm speaking with. I started my career in the direct marketing field and am somewhat fascinated at how direct marketing kind of fell off to the side a little bit as we started going into the internet world and digital as of the last number of years, and how what a lot of what direct marketing is doing connects to what the digital space is and that ability to target market. I have worked for global companies like R.R. Donnelley, ran their North American marketing in the telecom division, worked in the direct marketing space in the agency world, where I was turning on a dime to accomplish tasks. And then the entrepreneurial side, which on the one hand can be a lot of education of the client and a lot of kind of fun things where you get to be a part of different companies and in different industries, but still using marketing to achieve your goals.
I love it. And I think that you have just kind of a wealth of knowledge. One of the things that immediately had stuck out to me in our previous conversation was that you had called yourself a qualitative marketer. While I can assume what that means, I'd love to hear how or why you're defining yourself as that. What is qualitative marketing, or what makes you a qualitative marketer?
Absolutely. Well, I think back in the day, that was taboo to say that you were a qualitative marketer, because everything was so quantitative focused. One plus one had to equal two in order to put money against it. And there wasn't as much focus on the qualitative aspect. From my perspective, the qualitative aspect is talking about really understanding who your consumer is. Who is your audience? Who does that person, environment, you know, whatever the case may be, look like? And really understanding how what you are producing, whether it's a service or a product, is received by the consumer. So when you look at qualitative, it is really understanding who is Katya, who is the person behind the consumer? How do we reach that person?
Yeah.
Where quantitative is very much numbers based, and it's key as well, but it's a different approach.
Absolutely.
And in my opinion, they work very well together. But I am a qualitative marketer because I'm looking at more than what do the numbers mean. And I can do it like just a quick comment here in that I was hired by R.R. Donnelly. So they are a behemoth commercial printer. And everyone in the company that was in marketing were MBAs from Ivy Leagues they were quantitative marketers. I was hired by the president of the business unit because I was most definitely a qualitative marketer. No other way around it. And that brought a whole new bunch of opportunities that would never have come to play because I literally stood apart from the rest of the team. And but we needed each other. And it was just how you look at who's going to buy your product or service. How do we understand that person so we know how to market to them?
How do you do that? Is there a way to, I mean, is it creating the buyer persona? Is it doing surveys to really hone in on that? Is it diving into like the website traffic? Or is it all of those things in order to help inform you like who that consumer or that customer is?
I mean, it's what you want to know, right? So you get to the top of the funnel, you got people to the top of the funnel, but how do we get them down to the bottom? How do we get them to that conversion stage? And you have to understand what's the trigger for the customer. What's going to get them interested? You know, I talk about one other little piece of my bio that I can't believe I didn't even mention is I have a passion project called Inspiring Kitchen, and it's a brand that I created. Mm-hmm. It was created because I was working in marketing in the houseware industry with clients that were basically aspirational product lines in that they were more expensive than so cookware. You can go to the grocery store and get a frying pan for $10.
Yeah.
My frying pan's $150. Mm-hmm. So the quantitative part is like, it's just two frying pans. The qualitative part is explaining the difference in what you get between those two frying pans. So when you're at the top of the funnel, it's grabbing a hold of the consumer and getting them excited about cooking with cookware that lets them be the chef. It lets them, if they're educated in how to use the cookware, I get very animated with this subject, so forgive me.
I am here for it. I am here for it, and I'm trying not to interrupt you.
Okay, well, interrupt anytime you want. The cool part about it is what, if we talk cooking for a minute, what people get so frustrated about, they put a frying pan on the stove, crank it up to high, and everything burns. And they're either like, I'm a terrible cook, or bad cookware. Without understanding, cookware is designed differently. And when you get into the better cookware and when you understand what you're buying, so the education process, you're on board. So it may be aspirational. And I had a lot of customers when I was out in the field. I had a lot of customers when I was repping this brand that were, well, when I get married, my bridal registry, the holidays are coming, my birthday's coming, this is what I want. You know, and they'll be like, okay, $150, cannot buy that. And totally understand, but I still educate. And what you learn from all of it is when, and it doesn't work, you know, a pair of shoes, will it work Jimmy Choo's versus, you know, what you get at a, you know, dollar store for a pair of shoes? Different. You can speak to it, right?
Yes.
With cooking and things like that, if people connect to it, so in the end, I think as a marketer, as a qualitative marketer, I'm a storyteller. Mm-hmm. So whether I'm selling cookware, you know, anything in that industry, which I love, it's storytelling. It's how do you prepare, even if you're cooking for yourself, you can enjoy the cooking experience. And it's a really interesting thing. It's very much about the qualitative aspect. I've been on the B2B side of this business where I'm working in the most unsexy business of commercial HVAC, and we're talking widgets and actuators and all of these things that maybe they inspire some people, but me, it's the cookware line that will get me more.
Yeah.
But when you talk to the contractor in this case, they're as excited about this conversation of storytelling as you are as my home chef that I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Because it's not, I'm not just selling you a frying pan. I'm selling you an experience. That's a lot of qualitative in my opinion.
It is. It is a ton of qualitative. And ironically, I had a presentation yesterday where I talked about brand storytelling. So before you even said that, I thought what she is describing is brand storytelling because it's true. And in the presentation, this is also the ironic part, I used cookware.
Oh.
Is in my presentation, I compared the story of Crock-Pot. Of a crock pot, right? Like there was a description of this red crock pot. And then I described a scenario where I used it and why I used it in order to share the same story of the values of it, but it came from a different place. I think that to your point, brand storytelling is so effective because you're not just educating, you're pulling someone into it. Like I'm emotionally invested in what this food is going to taste like if we keep along the cookware line. But I think that it works for every brand, which then my next thought, because also the presentation was brand story, and then it was leveraging creators to help you share your brand story. What play do you think creators have with sharing a brand story?
Well, on behalf of being a creator as well, that's another piece of my inspiring kitchen. Being a creator is a huge part of it if the brand lets you be. So sometimes if a brand doesn't understand what a creator is going to do, they're going to put some boundaries on you. And when they do that, they hired me because they like the way I tell stories. I have a good following in, you know, the kind of influencer world, the creator world, and they can see who I am. And they hired me for that reason. If as a creator, the most important things are, tell me, brand, who do you want to be? Who are you? What is the messaging that you want me to carry to my followers who are going to share it further? So there needs to be that open dialogue, but there also needs to be a level of don't make the boundaries so tight that you're paying me as an advert, then I'm a copywriter for you. I'm not a creator.
Yeah.
And I think the way that the influencer world is going, the creator world, it's fascinating and it's very much evolving and it's very much relationship driven. It's honestly one of my favorite parts of being a creator.
Mm-hmm.
Just as like a really fun thing. I yesterday got a package in the mail, wasn't expecting it. I saw who it was coming from. And it was a brand I did work with last year. And they sent me a Valentine's Day gift of their product.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And it was just, it was unexpected products because that they are carrying that I didn't know about. And they weren't asking me to do anything with it. They just were like, thanks for what you've done for us because we're creating a partnership. And that's a really nice part of being a creator. So you want to take advantage. If you're hiring me to be your creator, you can get a feel for who my audience is. You get a feel for what my photographs look like, what my storytelling is, if it's a website post. And you really want to just make sure you're providing the guidelines of who you as the brand are, what you want the product or service to be. And then let the, you know, we all expect you to, especially the bigger brands, we know that you're going to review the draft. Totally fine.
Yeah.
But recognize when you're reviewing the draft, you hired me for the way I tell stories. Now, if I got something wrong in the way you present your brand, absolutely tell me and I'll fix it.
Yeah.
But if you just want me to sound like you, then you didn't need a creator.
So many great things that I kind of want to unpack a couple of those, yeah, of what you're saying, because I'm right there with you. We get a lot of brands that'll have these huge briefs, which is fine. But if you are basically, if I'm spoon feeding you all of the words that I want you to say, then you're right. It is a product placement. You're not hiring me as a creator. I'm just a producer of what it is that you want.
Right.
And you as a creator can make definitely that decision. Like, I'm either going to move forward with it or I'm not going to move forward with it, because being a creator is definitely a business. But the other thing that kind of sparked a thought when you were talking about that was, if I were to remove the creator aspect of it, right? If I were to remove that word and call you my marketing designer or just my graphic designer, I would not tell you how to work in InDesign, because that's not my job. I know what I like, and I can give you examples of it, which is what I do. And then when you turn it back to me after it's done, then yeah, I might have some feedback. It would be so great if people could view it that way, because for me, a creator is basically my designer. They're my photographer. They're my editor, right? They're also a bit of my copywriter as well, too, because they are taking whatever it is that I've shared with them as in regards to the brand story. I don't know what your thoughts are on like thinking of creators that way, or if it benefits a brand to think of it in that way.
I mean, that's a great way to look at it. You know, I think most of the brands see creators as separate from an internal person. It's almost the struggle, having been a consultant for a long time. It's almost the struggle that you have where the brand doesn't think you understand them, and that you can't grasp on to what their mission is, what their direction is. And they're not giving you a chance. They're not being open to, they hired you because you're smart and you're creative.
Yeah.
You can kind of figure it out. I'm not going to go do brain surgery, no matter how much you teach me as, you know, an orthopedic surgeon equipment person. But I can understand the product. I mean, I think it's interesting because one of the things that I found, and it's sort of the evolution of being a creator just in the last number of years, if you look at how long we've been even with a title like creator, it's not that long. I mean, I started Inspiring Kitchen in 2014, and it's so much more developed now than it was basically 7.5 years ago. And, you know, I think what a lot of brands are doing right in terms of when they do the creative brief, you do have, it could be you and me and 5 other people that are doing campaigns for them. And each of us kind of has a different style, which is why they chose us. So when they do the messaging that they want us to carry out, they'll give us 5 or 6 different points that they want mentioned. And they're like, use one of those at a minimum. Use it and incorporate it in your style. So that seems to work really well in my world, where if you tell me I must use this sentence, this full sentence this way, I'll figure it out, but I don't talk that way because you wrote it. I didn't. You know? So, but if you're saying this is the message, or please use these 2 words together because they're really important, I'll figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, I love that. And it is really great advice. That specifically, right? Like hitting, here are the 5 things, use one at least, gives it, it also puts the power on, you know, you get the power as the creator to decide which one makes the most sense for how you want to like actually get that delivered. Now, what, as a creator, what, when a brand reaches out to you, what makes you say yes? Is it someone who is a brand that is looking for, I don't know, more of a relationship or a partnership? Or is it the, yes, I love this particular brand? What in that outreach makes you want to kind of double click and ask, yeah, tell me more?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because I think over the last several years, my answer is going to has changed because initially it was, I just want to work with you. Now, I will say I have with Inspiring Kitchen, I have limitations because I for example, I am not a red meat eater or pork. I don't eat meat. Yeah. So I have had brands who send me messages, and especially on Instagram, who are like, oh my God, we love your account. You know, just your photographs, the way you write. We so want to work with you. They're a meat company. That is the only thing they produce. And I'm like, have you, and they're like, we love your account. And I'm like, have you looked at my account? There's literally zero meat on there. Not because you're going to be the first, but because you haven't tried to get to know.
Really?
So that becomes, I want to know I'm chosen because you like my style. Because while I can adapt somewhat in the writing style, there are brands that I like to work with based on their product lines, based on how they present them, how they present themselves. But it's interesting because now what I really love is these long-term relationships. And it's really the best thing for a brand and a creator. It's you basically are, and I don't know if someone's going to say I'm minimizing something or, but you're like a consultant.
I don't think that you're minimizing it. I think that you're getting to know the brand.
Exactly.
And when you do that, well, first of all, you're invested in it.
Right.
Right. Like if this is a partnership, this is what I'm bringing to the table. And I mean, you're not a half-ass person, I take it, you know, from just kind of your career in general. So and most creators just aren't either. Like they want to do a good job because that's also what continues their job,
right?
It's definitely not something that you can half-ass. And I think that the advantage of partnerships is you do get to know the brand a whole hell of a lot more. And I'm sure that you're trying to think of different creative ways too, that you're trying to sell the story or tell the story, right? You know, sell the product without selling the product. I mean, there's all of that as well too.
And I think the other thing, just to go, I absolutely agree with you. And I think one other little like side piece that I learned a number of years ago, if I'm ultimately hired by John at the brand and I do a great job for John, John looks great to his bosses who are like, you picked a good one. Let's have a work on this next project. So if you really build a nice rapport with the brand representative, whomever that is, because you're working so hard to build that understanding of who the brand is, what the messaging for this campaign is, what their goal is for the campaign, you have an opportunity to build that long-term relationship. That being said, there are definitely campaigns that are one-offs, and that can be fine too, because it is nice to have a little bit of a mix of different types of things that you're working on. My brand has been expanding and I'm doing more. Yes, I'm a recipe developer and talk about new product lines in the food industry that come out, but I also do a lot in the home design space, and I've started working with some really cool brands in that space and loving it. And it's all connected basically to the kitchen, because the work I did with the interior design brand is in the kitchen. So I can connect dots, but it's based on that relationship. And I think it's just a really interesting way for the brand to understand how you work. And brands are doing, for the most part, a great job evolving as well in how we work. I mean, there's always the kind of concerns of brands that are asking for everything for free. And it's like, would you work for free? You know, this is a lot of work. You like what we bring to the table as marketers and creators.
Yeah.
That's a job.
It definitely is a job. I got a question yesterday about product seeding. There are definitely brands that just have product seeding campaigns with creators. And one of the things that I had said is, that's one strategy because everybody has a different strategy. But I always think that it's not necessarily like asking someone to work for free all of the time, but it is a great way, the product seeding part, on like introducing your brand. And I don't know if you view that as well too. Do you ever have brands that reach out that are, that's like, hey, I want to send this to you and I want to get your feedback before we even talk about anything moving forward, like no strings attached. Is that a scenario that kind of indicates like, oh, this could potentially be a good partnership to you?
Well, if the ask is, we're going to send this to you, we think it fits who you are and your brand, mm-hmm. just let us know what you think. No obligation to post or to do anything. Love that. Actually do that frequently and have had a lot of fun doing that. And I have a very soft spot for those in the restaurant industry that, or even small food businesses that, especially after the last couple of years, it's like, if I can post, I'm going to benefit because you just sent me whatever. And there's a bakery in Atlanta, for example, that I've been doing projects with that their product is delicious. It's, and I just respect where they are. You know, we're not talking about, there's a major, major, major global brand that sent a request out a couple of years ago. They wanted, a bunch of us got it. They wanted us to do a video for $15. Every one of us was like, okay, first of all, $15 for a video would never be accepted because it's so much work. But you're like, I don't even know how many billions of dollars worth of a company. You're not an unknown name. And it was a fascinating, because a lot of it got back to the company. So like they missed that boat of what you were suggesting. If it's, you know, we just came out with a new vegetarian burger. We want to send it to you. Just let us know what you think. Totally interested. Happy to do that. You send me that and say, and we want 2 Instagram posts, a reel, 10 stories and a blog post. Thank you, but no. Or here's my budget. Here's my rate, you know, kind of a thing. So there, and I think people do things very different though. I will tell you, there's a lot and I admire these people and I don't find fault with their choices because it's a business and you choose what you want to do. But there are some of these significantly bigger brands in the food industry, like the bloggers and so on, that even if you sent it for free, they wouldn't touch it because it's still time consuming. It still takes time away from, you know, if I have to make a dish. So I had a brand out of Europe actually recently send me, a message and, you know, they're always complimentary, right? And and I liked the product. They're like, can we send it to you and can you do an Instagram post or reel? And I said, what's your budget? They said, we have none. And I said, you know, thank you. But when you do have one, please reach back out because I would be interested in trying. And they're like, well, what's the difference for you? And I said, because you're asking me to, number one, go out and buy ingredients that I have to pay for, let alone I need to take all the time out of my day away from paid business to create a recipe, to then photograph it, craft a caption or a blog post, whatever I was doing. And that's a day's worth of work. And you don't want to pay me for it. Would you work for free? And it was a very respectful conversation. But sometimes brands don't think about these things. And the brand with the $15 video, they know better.
You know, and it's interesting because I think that is such an old school way of thinking of, I almost put it in this bucket of like this old school thinking of what influencer marketing used to be and what creators are now, which truly is like they're part of your design team that are going to take the time to do all of those things and to be invested in it. Do you find that in those negotiations that you have to prove that it's a return on investment, or do you not even entertain that? And what I mean by that, and actually let me clarify, what I mean by like a return on investment is like, do you ever have to like put together a case study that says like, hey, you know, I worked with this brand and this is the type of success that I've seen based on my posts you know, just kind of gathering almost your media kit for working with a brand. Are you in those situations ever?
Yeah. I mean, I think you get into, and it's interesting because I was kind of thinking about it as you were talking based on what I had just been saying, that this is very much qualitative because this creators are qualitative. Because just like public relations, and I have a degree in that as well, PR people are never going to guarantee sales. You just can't. And I think how you look at this, so there's different ways you can almost make it quantitative. You can do affiliate marketing. You can tack that on. So I think a lot of people in the fashion industry, or maybe even the beauty industry too, I'm in the food industry, so this is really different. But in the fashion industry, if I'm wearing, you know, a dress and I put, you know, a reward style affiliate code on there, we can track results. We can track the number of people that are clicking it. We can track if it's being sold. Most likely they should be able to track where is it being sold. If the influencers in California, are people predominantly buying it in California? Are there some, is it a warm weather environment? You know, that kind of a thing where they can do that kind of really digging down and understanding who's doing the purchasing. So I think that there's a level when it comes to the creator space of who are you? Like, what is your brand's, what is your industry of sorts? You know, and I think I my focus is a little harder in the food industry, kind of in the travel industry, because travel industry, I can be showing a fabulous trip. This is another part of my Inspiring Kitchen world. And I can show a fabulous trip that I went on with all the details of, you know, where to go and the where to stay and kind of do an agenda or itinerary for them. But that doesn't mean they're going to do it in the next 3 months. It may be a place that they're going to go, okay, it's February. We're going to go there for Christmas. Well, that may be way out of the brand's kind of tracking, data tracking limit. So sometimes I think as creators, as marketers in the qualitative space, you're bringing visibility. And I know that brands are like, I need a number. You know, they want a number to attach. And you, in this situation, I don't think you can do that. I think you have to be aware of the awareness that you're getting of people that didn't know who you were before. Here's a super quick, for example, I responded to someone's Instagram, someone posted an Instagram post on where they went on vacation. And it was their, here are my top 4 vacation spots that we just love.
Yeah.
And I came back with a comment, something about, well, I'm a travel writer and I can't wait to be doing this travel again. And she came back to me and she said, well, where have you been? Testing me kind of a thing. And I'm like, go for it, girl. I'll come back.
I got you.
Yeah. So I'm like Finland, Mexico. And I started listing places. One of the places I listed, someone who, because I went digging then to find out who this person was, started now is following me.
And isn't that funny?
It's very interesting because it was an out of the blue person, but I looked at where he lived and I'm like, he actually lives on the property. Well, he lives in the area of which one of the luxury properties that I was talking about, the resorts, is, and they have homes there as well. So here he now understands that I talk about brands that are kind of in his wheelhouse. I was talking about luxury travel brands and with a good culinary side. And he could connect to it because he lives in that vicinity.
See, I love that. And ironically, I understand what you're saying in regards to the qualitative, that it is not like that sale. There is not this one for one. But I do think that there is a way to make that qualitative quantitative, because what you're describing as well too, what a brand would see is an uptick in their growth, right? And their overall growth on their social media channels. They may also see that uptick on their website as well, too. I think that, you know, it's all about the impressions and the views of something that has been that you are able to track. Like that's, those are the things that you can track.
Totally.
Engagement, sentiment. What are the words that people are using? Put that in a freaking, you know, word cloud. Right. And maybe that's what's going to inform the next campaign. I think it's almost just taking a look at it in a little different way. I want to like twist my head a little bit or turn my head being like, I think so often we're trying to think one for one. This is the myopic thinking. I need to make the sale, but that qualitative gets so much more. And then it gets people talking. And that's the stuff that you can't track.
100%.
Like, and that's so tough.
100%, 100%, 100%. And truthfully, I do think when you create campaigns, I do think that there is a qualitative and a quantitative that can be put together. So I think they absolutely can work together, but they are not the same campaign. You're going to go about it. You're going to go about it differently. But the value of what you learn from a qualitative, exactly as you said, watch engagement, like my story of what I just mentioned of this luxury resort. That was really wild to me, but I'm a marketer, so I'm recognizing that.
Like you're digging in, you're looking.
I mean, like the person who posted this of the four places luxury resorts she stayed at, it wouldn't mean anything to her, but I get it. And what's really interesting is if you consistency in who your messaging is. So there's a couple words that I would use when we're talking qualitative that I don't even really think the quantitative thinks about. You know, the authenticity of your account. Who you are is really important. Like, you know, back to the meat products that I do not show. And I mean, I was literally told when I started, because a larger brand of a larger influencer told me that I wasn't going to get anywhere because I didn't appeal to everyone. And I'm like, I don't want to appeal to everyone. I mean, that's not entirely true. You want everyone to like you, right?
Yeah.
But I recognize, just like my expensive cookware versus my $10 cookware, it's a different audience. And maybe some of the things I share are aspirational, and that's totally cool, you know? But so I think authenticity is really key. I think consistency is really important. I think understanding the brand messaging is also really important.
Absolutely.
You know? And then when an actual brand that wants to hire you looks at what you bring to the table, you can say, here I am.
Yeah.
You know, like you hear about creators that use filters and every picture looks the same. It's all the same color. It's all the same. And I'm not passing any judgment whatsoever on that. That's their brand.
Yeah.
The consumer brand has to decide if they want their product to look the exact same as every other photo.
Yeah.
Right. Because the coloring is the same.
Yeah.
There are other people that do very like black and whitish kind of images. And that's there. You see that almost interestingly more in fashion. I have a very colorful feed. If you look at my feed, and I love it. I love all the colors. Yeah. I love it because that's who I am.
Well, that's you. Yeah. I was just going to say, that's you. That's why I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's who I am. And so the brands like you for that reason. I'm authentic. Yeah. I'm not trying to be who I'm not. And when you get hired as a creator, the qualitative almost works against on me too. Like, does my qualitative skill fit the brand's qualitative?
Yeah.
You know?
I just love this rabbit hole. I love it.
It's really fun, isn't it?
It really is, because you know, influencer marketing is not new. Creators are not new. What we're calling influencers as creators now and expanding like the definition, all of that is not new. There's just so much room for like education and growing, and there is no one size fits all. I think that as a marketer in general, you have to be open to new ways and testing new ways. But I do think that the key to your point as well too is you have to be authentic. You as a creator have to be authentic. I as a brand have to be authentic as well too. Like I need to know my shit.
Right.
Right. Yes. In order to get exactly what it is that I'm looking for and trust in the creator. But that trust doesn't happen unless you have a relationship. So if I'm not willing to have a conversation with you, Julie, and tell you about the brand and hear what your thoughts are, then yeah, that's going to lead to a lot of friction, I feel like, when it comes to the partnership. And you want both sides to be happy, because when both sides are happy and also excited about it, you get from a brand's perspective, exactly what you wanted to pay for.
100%. And you get excitement, you know?
Yeah.
And then the creator's like psyched to help promote it. And
yeah.
And that, so it's a win-win for everybody. I mean, marketing is such a fascinating field because we're turning on a dime now. You know, companies used to move like big global companies used to move like dinosaurs when it came to making decisions, when it came to marketing. You can't do that anymore. You have to be more agile and you have to be, you can still be cautious, which I get. And I've done a lot of stuff in the old world manufacturing environment, which literally is like, can be kind of dinosaur-ish in terms of, you know, they're so matrixed that you have to get sign off by so many people, which just takes more time, right? But the marketing space is evolving so quickly and data gives us so much interesting information, which is almost the combination of qualitative and quantitative, where the data can help us understand things that we as qualitative marketers can then create campaigns out of.
Yeah.
To go and learn more about the consumer and what's going to trigger that consumer and how do we convert with that consumer helps a lot.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, long story short, you need both of them.
100%.
You just do.
You do.
No, it is time for predictions. Okay. I would love to hear your thoughts on what you see happening in the world of marketing creators in the next 1 to 2 years.
Well, I don't think that marketing is going away. I don't think it's only going to be quantitative. I think qualitative is just getting bigger and bigger. And I think how we're going to go about using it is getting bigger and more more creative. I mean, not to sound funny with that, but how we can use marketing to accomplish things is, you know, remember there used to be grassroots marketing where you're just on the street stopping people. Well, now we're doing it on the internet. Now we're capturing, I mean, look at TikTok. We're capturing people's attention on these platforms in such interesting ways that they want to learn more about a brand because they saw a creator post something that they're like, oh my gosh, I never knew I could use that for this reason. I got to go find out more about it. Well, there's a new potential customer for the brand. So as marketers, we have to learn more about how do we find that person? So I hired you to do that campaign. But now I'm seeing comments or I'm starting to realize there's an uptick somewhere where other followers or watchers of your video or your photograph or your story are curious. Well, will that work for me? And we as marketers have to go, yes, it will. We're going to show you how. And we need to make sure that we're there providing that information.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, like a funny, kind of a funny connection in, again, food industry, waffle irons. You make waffles, right? Well, did you know you can make eggs in there too? Did you know you can make a sandwich in there? Like you start teaching people and all of a sudden there's an uptick in sales of waffle irons.
Yes, and, because you're showing them it's more than what you initially think.
Exactly.
I love that. I love it. It's a lot of connecting the dots, a lot of information about qualitative and quantitative. Thank you so much for coming on. I could probably talk to you for another hour. So we will definitely have to do this again. Thank you so much.
I would love it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you for having me and anytime.
Of course. I am obsessed with Julie, the conversation, and this episode as a whole. Julie, as a creator and a marketer, does such a great job at providing a point of view that really every marketer needs to listen to. Now, as a marketer, she considers herself as more qualitative. And I promise that's not just jargon. What it basically means is that she's looking at the value for a customer versus being so focused on the data. Now, that doesn't mean that she doesn't care about or understand the value of the data. It's more about the idea that only looking at data can result in myopic thinking and a short-sighted strategy. And as a creator, she's someone who values long-term relationships with brands. Those that take the time to get to know her and her story, well, she reciprocates that right back to them with each partnership. And that point of view is also imperative for anybody listening to really absorb and take in. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast and get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. No pressure. And leave us a review. Connect with me on social. You can find me on LinkedIn, Katya Allison. And if you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.